Attention all groups. This is Admiral Akbar with your Armada advice. An FAQ clarified how obstruction works over obstacles. That if a ship's base or shield dial covers an obstacle so that the line of sight is traced over that instead of the obstacle, the attack is unobstructed. You might think that the same holds true for squadrons, but think again. The FAQ specifically refers to ships, and so doesn't overrule the rulebook, which says that if an attack goes over an obstacle, it's obstructed, even if the squadrons are base to base. Dogfighting in asteroid fields is difficult, and there's no way to get around that. Assume attack coordinates, and may the Force be with you.
At last we will deal with these rebel scum. You may fire when ready.
Welcome, Commanders, to the 27th episode of Fire When Ready, a Star Wars Armada podcast. I'm Jim.
Corellia liberated from Imperial control! Following an intense space battle, rebel forces, led by Commander Sato, have driven off the Imperial fleet from Corellian space, and now a vicious ground battle for control of the planet has commenced. While the rebels are pushing hard against the Imperial Navy, elsewhere, Governor Tarkin has crushed a rebel fleet in defense of the Nubia system. Reports are also coming in that Darth Vader himself remains in system, preparing an assault, so this conflict is anything but decided.
So yes, we're still doing our Corellian conflict campaign, and the rebels just managed to take Corellia away from us. They also jumped ahead of us on points, leading us 7-5, which means two things. That we finally get to launch two attacks in a round, and that it's very likely that the next turn the rebels will declare an all-out offensive. While they could keep going for points and try to win that way, I've never heard of a Corellian conflict campaign that ended in a point victory when the big team fight at the end is so much fun. We're all looking forward to hyperspacing our ISDs in. Or, at least we Imperials are. Oh, and BT Dubs, Harden Bulkheads, and Sovereign are pretty great. So yes, Wave 7 is in our hands now, and I have to say, the MC-75 is even prettier than I thought it would be. Fantasy Flight is really upping their game all the time on those paint jobs, and while I said before I was really excited about using Radis, and I will eventually, right now I'm using Instructor Gorin in my Conflict Fleet, and I want to make a big fighter wing around him, Dengar, Howl Runner, and a mess of interceptors. With Gorin and Dengar giving everything counter +2, and Howl throwing a bonus die onto the swarmers, I'm getting a pretty wicked grin at the idea of counter 5 interceptors with a swarm reroll. And of course, like everybody else, I want to try out Vader on a Kuat refit, giving it major rerolls to get crits with a fire control team on the heavy ion cannons and assault concussion missiles. Pulling that off and taking 2 shields off each adjacent arc is a recipe for disaster against enemy ships. How it'll work in practice is anyone's guess, but it'll be nice to see the Dark Lord on the table again. Oh, and true to my own previous advice, I took Black Squadron in my last battle. Not only was it counter 2 thanks to Gorin, it fit perfectly in after one of my advanced was destroyed. Now I just have to decide if I want to unscar it, or just let it die. On the subject of previous advice, one thing I didn't mention about using Valon Rudor is to watch out for snipe. A sniping squadron can be out of engagement range with your screening squadrons, but still able to attack, so if you're facing a sniper, be sure to give yourself a little distance between you and your escorts, so that they have to be engaged with them in order to shoot at you. Of course, when facing Rudor, do the reverse of all of that and nail him from a distance. Now, let's get back to those conflict squadrons with the new Y-Wings and the new TIE Interceptors. The Y-Wings came out like gangbusters in Corellian Conflict, as each of their new uniques are great choices. First up, Nora Wexley. If the name sounds familiar, it's because her son is Snap Wexley from Force Awakens, who I assume will be back in Episode 9 since Greg Grunberg and J.J. Abrams are pals. They're both heavily featured in Chuck Wendig's post-Return of the Jedi novels, which are okay. And by both, I mean Nora and Snap, not Greg Grunberg and J.J. Abrams. That'd be weird. They're okay except for Mr. Bones, who is the highlight of the series. Those who have read them know what I'm talking about. Nora has the same stats as Dutch. 3 speed, 6 hull, 3 blues, and bomber black. She's 1 point more expensive, though, and I'm guessing that's due to her aura buff power. Dutch is more of an anti-squadron ace that does bombing pretty well, and Nora is an ace that makes other bombers better. Plus, she's no slouch in the anti-squadron department. Yes, Dutch does extra damage, but Nora isn't heavy, which means you can use her to lock down other squadrons in a defensive role, giving her flexibility that Dutch doesn't have. And when it comes to bombing, she's even better due to her ability to allowing herself and any other bombers at distance one of her to use their crit effect to just take a shield off the defending hull zone. Taking off that shield may not seem like a lot. After all, it's just one extra damage, right? Except that it isn't just a point of damage, it's an effect. So that removing of the shield just can't be redirected away. It allows for a focusing of damage into the zone you're attacking. And this lets your bomber wing strip the shields down for a follow-up strike by a ship, especially if that ship has XI-7s that can't be easily sent to other facings. Nora works best as part of a bomber wing, naturally. And while any bomber works great with her, she especially likes ones with 2 dice to attack with. That way, she can soften up a shield facing with her attack. Then the heavy hitters come in to back her up with larger damage attacks that force your opponent to start burning redirect tokens if they want to absorb the damage after the shields are drained off by those crits. To maximize this, you really want to have a bomber command center nearby to go fishing for those crits. And while you're doing rerolls, having Nim with her is solid to discard either the redirect or brace tokens to further focus or maximize damage, depending on how many shields are left at that point. You're also going to want to have intel around to let her do what she's there to do, regardless of engagement. If she's across the table from you, your best defense is to take her out quick. Barring that, if you have the ability to move freely, swarm her so that other squadrons can't get into distance one with her and one of your ships as easily. That'll take a lot of squadrons to do, though, and you might be running with a minimal screen. If that's the case, focus your attention on keeping her tied down as much as possible, targeting her intel if you can, and focus your fire on the ships that'll be activating her. And then just stay away from her. She is just speed 3, after all. Now, the non-ace unique is Gold Squadron. Known mostly for getting blown up in the Death Star trench, Gold is a far better bombing group than you'd be led to believe by just impacting on the surface. This Gold Squadron is the one that strutted its stuff in Rogue One, replacing the normal single black die with 2 blue ones to attack ships. Other than that, they're a standard Y-Wing squadron. That 2 blues may not sound like much, but in practice, it's pretty big. Unlike a normal Y-Wing, they can lock a defense token, like a scatter or redirect. Effects that discard an attack die aren't going to be as potent against them. Plus, they get the full effect of Torin Far and Bomber Command on either of their dice, or both if you split the rerolls. 2 dice also lowers your chances of a total whiff, as that only happens when you have the misfortune of a double accuracy. They're also not heavy, just like Nora, so they can also lock down squadrons if they need to, as befits their blocking ability inside that trench. They don't have any defense tokens, though, so they're vulnerable to anti-squadron attacks, but they still have 6 hull to chew through. You won't be able to get them free from engagement without intel very quickly, however. With only the standard 2 blues against imposing fighters, they're not going anywhere. They can't run on their own, but they're a great addition to a Rebel bomber wing for a mere 2 points. So those are your Corellian Conflict Y-Wings. They don't run well on their own. One of them there is to buff other bombers. The other will get shot down if it's by itself. But they both add a ton to any Rebel bombing wing. And as an old-school Star Wars fan, I'm always in favor of anything that gets more Y-Wings on the table. After the break, we'll look at Sienna Ree and Saber Squadron for the TIE Interceptor.
When Jim wants to play Armada, he heads down to Round the Table in Lynnwood, Washington. They have board games, a friendly and helpful staff, food, ice cream, and a rotating selection of beer and ciders, so you can loosen up and fly casual. Thursdays are X-Wing and Armada night, so come on down for a glass and a game and say hello. Find out more at www.rttgamepub.com.
We're back, and now it's interception time. Sienna Ree is another character from Corellian Conflict that originates from the new canon novels. She hails from the excellent Lost Stars by Claudia Gray, which is marketed as a young adult novel, but really isn't. I highly recommend it. It's by far my favorite of the new stuff, and I'll recommend anything else by Ms. Gray as well. Sienna is a no-frills TIE interceptor. No extra dice or stats, and the usual brace scatter defenses. Her power is a potent one, though. She is always obstructed when being attacked. Against squadrons, this doesn't mean a lot necessarily, it's just one die removed. But against ships, it means she can't be flaked if that ship doesn't have a double die anti-squadron battery. So in general, she's tougher to kill. But against ships, she's often invulnerable. She still only has 3 hull, though, so don't send her out alone and think she'll survive long. One good accuracy, and she's toast. She works really well alongside Valen Rudor, since opponents have to attack her, and she's hard to hit. She also has good synergy with Admiral Sloan, since ships often can't hit her while she's attacking them at point-blank range. Of course, jamming fields do nothing for her, and obstacles only a little, since obstruction is either on or it's off. Do note that it's only the attack that's obstructed, not generally, so she is still engaged with whatever she's fighting and can't move away. That's why I said obstacles only do a little for her, so if you want her to move around, either give her some intel, land her on an obstacle, or only have her go after heavy squadrons. Other than that, she's just a more survivable TIE interceptor. She's a point cheaper than Soontir, and doesn't do any extra damage, but she also doesn't need any other squadrons around to do her thing. Keep her supported with other fighters, and she'll last long enough to be a real nuisance while dealing out large amounts of damage. Saber Squadron is the non-ace unique, and it's the squadron that Soontir Fell commanded. They have standard interceptor stats, but swap out counter for a powerful snipe. Unlike the E-Wing, Saber's attack doesn't degrade at snipe range. It's 4 blues, whether you're up close or far away. And that's good, because Saber's the only snipe the Empire has right now. Having snipe completely changes the way that you're going to use them from a normal interceptor. Since they can't counter, and they throw the same amount of dice either way, there's no incentive to put them up close and personal. Saber Squadron should rarely be the first squadron you activate, and if it is, it shouldn't be the only one. You should also make sure you measure with other squadrons to make sure they can engage whatever's around after Saber takes its shot. Honestly, this is why I advise making them a squadron you activate toward the middle or end of your turn, so that you can line up the rest of your squads first to engage the enemy, and just make it easier on yourself. Once they're tied down, Saber can swoop in and zap them from a comfortable distance. Saber is the answer to the key aces in your opponent's list. If they rely on intel to be able to move past your fighters and start bombing, you can snipe the intel ship. They've got Mahler Mythyl bouncing around damaging everything? Blast him around his escorts. Saber is also the answer to that Dengar Howlrunner Instructor Gorin super counter combo I mentioned earlier. Since snipe ignores counter, you can blast those nasty counter 5 interceptors from safety. Even if there's nothing that needs picking out, still keep Saber back. It's too useful to have one good shot take all 3 hull off of it when it can stay around and irritate your opponent. And like I said, there's no reason not to. When facing Saber, you just have to get engaged with it. Then a single good blast will stop it cold, and it can't even counter back. Intel is going to help here, or else keeping something fast like an A-Wing back to leap over the front lines will do the trick. Just be thankful that Saber's the only sniper you're going to have to deal with. So those are the new interceptors. One's got staying power, the other's got staying away power. Either one is a potent addition to your fleet, though I think you'll find a lot more reason to take Saber than Sienna in general. That's it for this episode. Next time, more squadrons as I plow ahead towards getting caught up with all of this. Until then, you worry about those fighters, and I'll worry about the tower. Take us out, Admiral.
It's a wrap!
Fire When Ready, a Star Wars Armada podcast, can be found at www.firewhenreadypodcast.com. Talk to me online on Twitter as @ArmadaJim. Or by email at jim@firewhenreadypodcast.com. All celebrity voices impersonated, all rights to the spoken content of this podcast are reserved.